What's up, everybody? John Middlecoff back again. Three and Out podcast brought to you by the Colin Cowherd Podcast Network. Big show coming up today. I got to hit on John Gruden and Chip Kelly because I think they have a little something in common. You know, we're talking Sam Darnold. Looks like a star rookie quarterback. The New York Jets are not bad. I'm going to kind of do something new today. We might start doing a couple podcasts in a week, but just because this week we're only doing one, I'm kind of going to fly around the league, different things I saw, different things that stood out to me. And then at the end, like always, Middlecoff mailbag. You can slide up into my DMs at John Middlecoff on Instagram, or you can go, you can listen to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. But if you go to iTunes and in the review section, subscribe, rate, and in the review section, leave a question. I will get to that in the Middlecoff mailbag. But first, I got to start with SeatGeek. Football is back, and SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets for every game all season long. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or find the perfect gift, SeatGeek will help you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, been using it for years. Got my little brother Cal tickets this weekend. It's so easy. It's easy to scroll through, find the exact price point you want. And again, it is fully guaranteed. By searching multiple ticket sites and grading every ticket based on value, SeatGeek helps you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. And it doesn't end with sports. Concerts, comedy, you name it, SeatGeek has it. Again, I have the app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I actually just use SeatGeek, like I said, to get my little brother, little Jeff as I call him, even though he's bigger than me, Cal tickets for this weekend. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the app, enter the promo code John, that's promo code John, J-O-H-N, for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, it's a live event, we have the tickets. Let's start out with John Gruden and Chip Kelly, because I think they have a little something in common. And when you look around football and the explosion of money in the league, ton of coaches make a ton of money. Bill Belichick, no one knows his salary. I'd be shocked if it's not like over $12 million. Nick Saban, $10 million. Jim Harbaugh, a ton of cash. But the one thing that those guys, Andy Reid's been making huge money forever. Dabo Sweeney, I mean, Urban Meyer, all these coaches. The one thing they all have in common, though, is they never left the industry. So their edge, while they kept making money, they never kind of left the bubble of football and just kind of got a feel for, wow, there's more out there. I don't need to kind of work as hard. Wow, you can do other things in life than just sit at the office 24/7. And I think when you see John Gruden and Chip Kelly, John Gruden this offseason, these last 10 days for John Gruden have been an absolute train wreck. I mean, an absolute utter train wreck. Trading Khalil Mack and then, lying with Lisa Salters for the nation to see that Khalil Mack did not want to be a Raider. That's just unequivocally false. Then to the Monday Night Football game where he just looked lost in the second half. To then the following day after an embarrassing loss, signing Martavius Bryant, who he had previously traded for a third-round pick and cut before the season. Very Al Davis-like move. And then Chip Kelly, who one of the more hyped coaches in recent memory. When I was scouting, I went through the University of Oregon when I was with the Eagles. It was before we hired him. And the program was absolutely humming. He was the apple of everyone's eye, not just in the NFL, but around college football, just of everything they were doing at the school. He was kicking ass and taking names. And then over the next 5 years, think about this. Really quick with Gruden, Chip has a little different path. For 8-9 years, John Gruden called Monday Night Football games after he had utterly failed with Tampa Bay, was courted by every major university and NFL team for 5, 6, 7 years, offered huge amounts of money, yet he hadn't done anything over that time, right? He had not been coaching. Everyone was getting on their knees and kissing his ass. And he kept getting raises. He hadn't done a damn thing besides call Monday Night Football games. So if you're not grinding in the world of football and everyone is kissing your ass, you start getting probably a false sense of reality, you know? And think about this. I know people that work in other industries that told me that would be in the know that his endorsement deals through Corona were astronomically high. And John Gruden loves to hang his hat on, I would coach for free. No, John, actually you wouldn't. It took Mark Davis paying you $100 million for you to return. So not only would you not coach for free, you wouldn't have coached for $50 million. You wouldn't have coached for $75 million. It cost you $100 million to return to the sideline. And I keep looking up and I keep seeing commercials with you in them. They are paying you a premium to be in those commercials. Yeah, you love football. And I'm not disputing that John Gruden doesn't still work as hard. I've actually heard his work ethic is incredible. But money is the driving factor with John Gruden, where I do not believe with Bill Belichick, with Andy Reid, with Nick Saban. I'm not saying those guys don't like their money and don't value it as a, you know, as a form of respect in their business. But I know for a fact now, unequivocally, you cannot deny it, that Gruden mandates that his employer to do business, they pay him the most. And again, I couldn't be any more pro-capitalism. But Gruden, I read a Dan Pompey feature 2 weeks ago in Bleacher Report that said, I would coach for free. I love the game that much. No, Gruden, you won't do anything for free. You made Corona pay you millions. They from what my sources say, they saved money on Tony Romo. And now Gruden might be more, you know, fun of a character to have in those ads in that, you know, 1-800 hotline. But don't get it twisted. John Gruden, don't, it's his agent. No, I mean, his agent works for John Gruden. John Gruden mandates that you pay him a premium. Mandates it. Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly, Jeffrey Lurie, that got along with the coach for 15 plus years, the ups and the downs, a lot more ups with Andy Reid, and Andy's much easier guy to deal with, stood by him. They had one of the more consistent organizations in the NFL. Remember Chip and Howie had the famous breakup? Jeffrey Lurie, going into week 17, Chip's third year, said the security guard up there, pack your stuff, put it in a box, and get out of my building. Leave. Chip was fired. I mean, it was a pretty famous firing. Within 3 weeks, Jed York was offering him another job. So in Chip's mind, yeah, I failed, but Jeffrey was the idiot. Howie was the crazy guy. Jed York lining up to pay him again. Then a year later, after you know the Niners blow him out because he was god-awful, Casey Wasserman, one of the richer heavy hitters in Los Angeles, and Troy Aikman, NFL royalty, were kissing his ass to come coach at UCLA. So, like John Gruden, how would Chip Kelly have any sense of reality and have to do any inward thinking, like, I got to improve? Every time he fails, people are lined up to hire him. And here's the thing with both those guys. I was a little younger when John Gruden was coming up with the Raiders, but you watch all those NFL films, even when he was the offensive coordinator with the Eagles, he had an FU edge to him. When I went through scouting, when he was coaching Oregon, Chip Kelly had a massive edge to him. Both of those guys really had something to prove. It never felt like it was about the money with either. Now, a young John Gruden, the NFL coaches and just coaches in general were not making anywhere near what they make now. Chip Kelly was making more money, but it never felt like when he was at Oregon, like, it wasn't really about the money. He had no life. Remember, there were pictures of, like, his house. He had no furniture. It was just a grinder. Well, over this period of time, Jeffrey Lurie pays him a boatload, fires him to go away. Jed York is immediately there to pay him another $25 million. A year later, Casey Wasserman and Troy Aikman are lined up to pay him again. John Gruden has gotten so rich. Chip Kelly has gotten so rich. You cannot tell me both those guys that had this massive kind of, you know, chip on their shoulders, proving to the world how great they were going to be. Even as their ego grew in the prime of their coaching careers, they just had a massive edge to them. They carried themselves a little differently, but I think they had a lot of similarities. You cannot tell me that money, and I'm not saying that they still don't work as hard. Like I said, I think I don't know if Gruden's quit because they're at 3 in the morning, but he works long hours. I've always heard Chip works hard. I'm not disputing their work ethic, but their edge, the edge that Nick Saban, that Bill Belichick, that Andy Reid still has, the edge for these two guys is gone. And it's because of money. They have gotten too rich. They've gotten too rich, both of them. I'm watching Chip Kelly get his ass kicked by Oklahoma. Listen, I'm not saying UCLA should have beat Oklahoma. He just looks apathetic there on the sideline. Just kind of staring. Well, if Casey Wasserman and Troy Aikman fired him tomorrow, he just accumulated like $90 million in a six-year span. What does he care? Chip Kelly at Oregon, I always heard in a blowout win, if he caught players screwing it around on the sideline, he would light them up. The Chip Kelly I see now doesn't have it. John Gruden, who stood up on the podium early in January when he was hired, we're going to win now. I came for this job for Derek, Khalil, and Amari. 9 months later, Khalil's gone. And he's basically waving the white flag. We're in a rebuild. We're in a rebuild? John, you just took over a job that was ready to win now. Like, to me, both those guys, the edge is gone. And there's only one explanation. They've gotten too rich. Chip Kelly, unlike Gruden, doesn't pretend he'd coach for free. You know, I would recommend Gruden stop talking about you'd coach for free. It could not be any more disingenuous. Because you wouldn't do anything for free. You wouldn't do anything for $100,000. You know, it cost you seven figures to get your ass in the door. That's the point of entry for you. For Chip, Chip is just used to, whether it's Phil Knight, whether it's Jed York, whether it's Jeffrey Lurie, whether it's Casey Wasserman and Troy Aikman, just having his ass kissed. Like, what happened to the edge of Chip Kelly? Do you know the craziest thing I've ever seen? Fresno State, where I actually worked 10 years ago, is going to the Rose Bowl this weekend. Wherever you look, and I look at my bookie, the Fresno State Bulldogs are favored. The Fresno State Bulldogs, who probably don't have one player who was offered by UCLA, and I get they're not all UCLA's players, but Chip Kelly, if you would have told me 10 years ago that Chip Kelly would be coaching another Pac-12 school, they would be at home playing Fresno State and be an underdog, I would have laughed in your face. But if you would explain to me, well, you know, he's been fired from three jobs, he's accumulated almost $100 million. He just doesn't quite seem like the same guy. Also, his offense, everyone does what he does now. He doesn't really have a point of difference. And he's just kind of apathetic. I would say, well, that kind of makes sense. Because here's the one thing I keep seeing. I've always heard this about Gruden. Gruden never thought he was the smartest guy in the room. That's why he worked so hard, to overcome it. Chip always kind of thought he was the smartest guy in the room. And many people have told him that. And he's been reading it forever. And I saw a lot of people tweeting, like, Chip is a really smart guy on Saturday. And I would wave a red flag to that a little bit. Because if you are a genius, and everyone's been telling me this for the last, I don't know, however long on Chip Kelly, geniuses adapt. You know, you don't go down as the Titanic sinks. You start thinking of a way to patch it up, to stay above water for a little bit, to find a raft. Chip does the same thing over and over and over again. So if you are just this brilliant football mind, you'd think you'd have a second pitch. Like, hey, Chip, they know the fastball is coming. Throw something off speed. Mix in a changeup. But he can't. So I'd question, and I have people in the NFL that tell me this all the time, like, is he really that smart of a football guy? Belichick's a smart football guy. You know why? He's ran every offense and every defense imaginable over the last 10 years. You know who's a smart football guy? Andy Reid. His offense has changed like 15 times in the last 5 years. Adapt. I look at smart football people that can adapt. Nick Saban, offense changed as the world changed. His 3-4 defense no longer has Terrence Cody nose tackles. Has slimmer, faster upfield guys to negate the spread offense. And I just see Chip Kelly, same thing, over, 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 and over again. John Gruden, hey John, it's not 1998 anymore. You know why Khalil Mack didn't pick up your phone call? Because that's not his job to negotiate the contract. He pays Joe Siegel 3% of that $100 million that he just earned to do that. So yeah, don't be angry that he didn't pick up your phone call. This is 2018, $100 million on the line. I know when I want to talk to you about business, I go to your agent. I don't go to you. And I know the answer that I'm going to hear on that phone line from your agent. It's going to say seven figures and he's going to hang up. And that's just an endorsement deal. To get you to coach, it's going to be at minimum, clearly, $100 million. That's what it takes to get you to the table. So I view both these guys. Money has played a huge role in just them losing their edge. When you're told how great you are, time in and time out, I've never had that happen to me. Most people listening have never had that happen to you. I hope that as I become more successful, I never lose my edge if I make anywhere near the money those two guys are made. But it's human nature. I get it. I'm not saying it's crazy what's happened to them. I just don't even think it's arguable anymore with both of them. And I think you look at them, neither of them are adapting. John's living, 20 years ago. Chip has just really struggled. He can't, truly look at himself in the mirror and say, what do I need to change? Why would he? He's just constantly told, here's another job. Here's another $25, $30 million. Gruden's constantly offered jobs and offered enormous amounts of money without proving anything. And I think you get this. You get Khalil Mack traded. You get John Gruden said he wouldn't pick up his phone calls, and it's Khalil Mack's fault. You get Chip Kelly, an underdog to Fresno State at home. Money changes lives. And crazy wealth ruins people because most people, whether you're young or old, do not handle extreme wealth very well. Let's get into a little something we saw Monday Night Football, and his name is Sam Darnold. Started off the game with a pick six. Crazy play, like threw it across the field, pick, dude on the Lions took it back, and then went on to absolutely eviscerate with his defense. And I think I said last week, the Jets were one of my sleeper teams in the NFL. They are a Tom Brady broken ankle away from winning that division. Now, again, knock on wood, I don't want Tommy Terrific to get hurt. But if he were to, have any major injury, I think the Jets could win that division. The crazy thing is, they're only sniffing what they're going to become because they have the youngest starting quarterback in the history of the NFL. But I've been saying it on this podcast, and I've been saying it anywhere you'll look, that sometimes in life it's better to be luckier than good. And I hated the trade when they traded up from 6-3 because they didn't know what they were trading up for. It's one thing to do it on draft night when you know the exact player was there. And I think Todd Bowles and Mike Maccagnan had said after the fact that once they got Sam Darnold, that Sam Darnold was the number one player on their board. But they did not know he was going to be there when they made that move. But he fell into their laps. And there's a reason. Listen, I live in the Bay Area. It's the Golden State Warriors, when it comes to television ratings, when it comes to popularity, are basically right now like the Dallas Cowboys. Now, it hasn't been going on long. It's been like a five-year stretch. But the main reason they are that is because of Steph Curry. And the main reason they have Steph Curry is because once upon a time, the Minnesota Timberwolves took two point guards. I repeat, two point guards ahead of Steph Curry. Now, I don't know who in their right mind, back-to-back picks, takes two point guards. But if you are going to take two point guards in a draft where Steph Curry's in it and you pass on him twice, you're an idiot. And it was crazy then, and it's 7 million times crazier now. But the Warriors got lucky. He, again, fell into their laps. And the rest is history. And you see that there's going to be a ghost of Sam Darnold in the city of New York. Because as I'm watching Jacksonville play the New York Giants, I'm not putting it all on Eli. But he can't move. He's not a dynamic player. Of course he's not. He's never been able to move. He's 37 years old. Last time I checked, this hurts to say, I'm about to turn 34 years old. For the last, I would say ever since I left from my 20s to my 30s, I used to be able, as long as I worked out, ate whatever I want. And I could eat pretty dirty. And I mean, when I was younger, I ate really dirty, fast food and stuff. As I got in my 20s, it was more, I still like a good cheeseburger. I still like some good Mexican food. If I have a cheeseburger now, the next day I feel like I'm 5 pounds heavier. And everyone always told me, like most people, as you get older, your metabolism slows. as you get older, like bumps and bruises hurt a little more. You know, if you have I had a knee injury. It hurts a little more when I'm 33 than it did when I was 25. Eli Manning is dramatically worse than he was 5 years ago, right? It's just human nature. Father time, unless you're Tom versus time, is undefeated. They pass on a quarterback for a running back. No one disputed that Saquon Barkley was not a great player. He had one of the highlight plays of the week in a sweet run, but it was really for nothing. He's a running back. I can find sweet running backs in the second, third, fourth round. Sam Darnold was sitting there. And the other guy, all I heard all offseason in Hard Knocks, which this season Hard Knocks, best season Hard Knocks in a while, the Cleveland Browns were made for Hard Knocks. But was they got Tyrod Taylor because they needed to win some games? Of course they did. They'd won one game in 2 years. You know, it's like eventually if you're a company, you need to make some money. Eventually, if you're an NFL team, you need to win a damn game. So I get it. Yet Tyrod Taylor, I think last year the stat was, of course, the Cleveland Browns didn't win a game, but they didn't even have a quarterback on the roster who had won an NFL game. That's a problem. So I get what they're doing. Starting Tyrod Taylor, ease into Baker. Well, part of starting Tyrod Taylor is because he's better than Baker, one, and two, he helps you win games. Tyrod Taylor, in the game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, who let's call it what it is, this saddest moment probably in 2017, when Ryan Shazier went down, and it looks like he's doing fantastic. I don't know if he's ever going to play football again, but he clearly is not a paraplegic or anything. He can walk, so it turned out as well as it could have given how bad it looked at the time. But he was a special player for them. He made them, to me, last year before he got hurt, they were going to win the Super Bowl. I felt it to my core. Roethlisberger was rolling. Their defense was rolling. They were going to win the Super Bowl. Everything changed when he went down. They were there to be had. The Cleveland Browns caused 5 turnovers. I repeat, 5 turnovers. You know their problem? Was Tyrod Taylor. Went 15 of 40. I'm not a math major, but that's well under 50%. I am paying Tyrod Taylor, if I'm the Cleveland Browns, to just be serviceable. Get 60%, not really turn the ball over. He had a crushing turnover in that game. I drafted Baker Mayfield. If I'm sitting there, Jimmy Haslam, Hugh Jackson, John Dorsey, like I'm watching the Monday Night Football game. Again, the Detroit Lions are not as good as the Pittsburgh Steelers, but it's pretty clear, like, God, Sam Darnold is pretty goddamn good. What are we doing with Baker Mayfield on the sideline? And it's also not like Baker Mayfield was a third-year junior. He was a fifth-year senior. So mentally, he's been in multiple systems in college. Like, we got to get this train on the tracks here. Like, I'm sorry, Tyrod. If Tyrod Taylor starts one more game for the Cleveland Browns, and I was a Browns fan, I'd be furious. This is not 1994. It's why I did think the stat on Sam Darnold was a little skewed. Youngest starting quarterback in the history of the NFL. That's all I've kept reading since the merger back in the day. Well, here's the problem with that stat. The majority of rookie quarterbacks for a long period of time, two things. In college, they didn't play young. So it took most times, like you didn't get to play as true freshman back in the day. Remember forever, a freshman or a sophomore had never won the Heisman. Well, as times changed, more young players started starting. And in the last 10 years, a lot of underclassmen have won the Heisman. Forever, young players, first off, for a long period of time, there was like a JV. I remember reading a story like Ken Stabler wasn't even on the varsity team as a freshman. You had to play like JV football. This was in like the 70s. And then forever in the NFL, rookie quarterbacks did not see the field, no matter how highly you were drafted. That really didn't change probably within my generation, you know, within the last 15 years. Right in that sweet spot of like, remember, one of the last blue chip guys was, we're going to sit Carson Palmer for a year behind John Kitna. And it wasn't that crazy. It was like, yeah, give Carson some time. Can you imagine if the equivalent of Carson Palmer, who was one of the better prospects in the last 20 years to come out of college, sat for a year? That would be blasphemy because it doesn't happen anymore. Jameis, Carr, Dak, you go around the league, Mariota, Sam Darnold. Hell, it was just before I started recording this podcast, Josh Allen is starting this week. He's starting. So these young quarterbacks play right away. They play right away, mainly because they're ready. It's never been easier to play quarterback because they can hit you. The game's much more spread out. The defense, the way the game is officiated is kind of against you. It's easy to play the quarterback position. Not that it's easy to play the position, but it's never been easier for young guys to make the transition. Like, I'm sorry, if I'm Cleveland Brown, I need Baker Mayfield in the game this week. I can't see any more of Tyrod Taylor. Like, this team is too talented. I was saying all offseason, ever since Hard Knocks, they got premium players at every position. Difference makers. Ndoku, I don't think I said his name right, but the tight end is sweet. Jarvis Landry, Chubb, the dude they drafted from Georgia, legit running back. Like, they have a solid offensive line. Myles Garrett looks like a freak. Denzel Ward, multiple picks in the game. Top five pick. Time to roll, baby. Tyrod Taylor, like, I am paying you to, listen, win-loss is not a quarterback stat, but losing is. When you go 15 of 40 and you have a key interception late in the game, that's on you, buddy. 15 of 40? 15 of 40? Like, come on, you can't get 50% completions? We got problems. I'm sorry, Tyrod. You seem like a great guy, and for whatever reason, social media thinks you're John Elway Jr., but you're not very good. I drafted Baker Mayfield. I didn't draft him in the second round. I drafted him number one overall. I'm watching Sam Darnold just ball because, of course, he's going to ball. He's a baller. We got to get Baker Mayfield in there. I'm watching Eli. He can't even move. They got Odell Beckham that looks better than ever. I mean, how good does Odell Beckham Jr. look? He looks healthy. He looks fast. He looks on a mission. Props to all the guy that got paid this offseason. Odell Beckham, huge money, playing his ass off. Khalil Mack, huge money, playing his ass off. Aaron Donald, huge money, playing his ass off. Millennials take a bad rap, but I'll tell you this. I am an older version of millennial, and my younger brother is right in the sweet spot of the millennials. They're a nice generation. I do think they get the bad rap on just society. they're friendly. They do what they're told. They're good people. You know, they really are. And the millennials that all got paid this offseason in the NFL, huge money. And a lot of times people worry, like, will money change you? Didn't change any of those three guys. Odell Beckham is ready to roll. Can you imagine if Odell Beckham had Sam Darnold? You'd be like, well, you wouldn't have Saquon. Yeah, so what? I have Nick Chubb. I'd have Royce Freeman. I'd have another running back. You know, I'd have Sam Darnold, and I wouldn't have Eli. The way Eli is just, I don't know, the false sense of reality they have in that organization on Eli Manning is troubling. Because if you told me Sam Darnold was a quarterback of the New York Giants, I'd say, God, they're going to have one of the best offenses in the league in the next 3 or 4 years. But instead they have Eli Manning, and they're going to be looking for a quarterback in the near future. It was travesty that they passed on him. But again, back to the New York Jets. There's a reason the Golden State Warriors got Steph Curry. Because idiots and morons were in front of him. Now, I don't know if Baker Mayfield is not as good as Sam Darnold. I would bet against it. And I like Baker Mayfield, but I don't think he's going to be that good. And I think if he was that good, again, he's a fifth-year senior. So he's not like a true junior or young guy that's kind of swimming. A fifth-year senior who hung his hat on being a smart guy. He can't beat out Tyrod Taylor? This guy's 15 of 40? We got some problems. If I'm a Cleveland Brown fan, I need Baker Mayfield in the game. If I'm a New York Giants fan, it's going to be a hard year to watch, especially if Eli continues to just look like meh. Of course he looks like meh. He's been meh for a while. I mean, what's the famous saying? Lepers don't change their spots? Well, once you get old and you can't move, you're old and you can't move. You're not all of a sudden going to be, you know, a fluid athlete again, and Eli never was. So the New York Jets, and if you're a Jets fan, should thank their lucky stars every so often that they were gifted the franchise quarterback. Let's do a little something just because there's so much happened this week. I kind of want to touch on many things. Let's go around the league and just hit on several games or things that really stood out to me and dive in, you know, spend a couple minutes on each. Let's start with the Bears. Everyone and their mother knew that, oh my God, they just got Khalil Mack. And I wrote about it on The Athletic a couple weeks ago. I asked a bunch of NFL executives. There's not another team in the NFL that would have traded Khalil Mack, not after year four. Whether they would have made him play out year five, I hear this all the time. Belichick, he got rid of Richard Seymour. Yeah, after 8 years. Richard Seymour played for the Belichick from 02 to 08. Julius Peppers played for the Carolina Panthers from 01 to 09. Elite players play a second contract. Fletcher Cox, look around the NFL. Earl Thomas, Luke Kuechly. They all get extended. Patrick Peterson in their prime on their first team. Harrison Smith. That you don't move teams in your prime when you're a future Hall of Famer. J.J. Watt, Aaron Donald. You keep those guys. So for the Chicago Bears to land that guy, listen, he hadn't been to a practice until last Monday. He'd been to four practices before that game. He's a freak. He's an all-timer. He's basically LT 2.0. Not quite as good as peak LT, but without the crack and the hookers. You know, good character guy. A dude you don't have to worry about. A dude you feel good paying. The Bears, I know they lost, and it was a devastating loss. But I thought the Bears looked really good. It was the first game Matt Nagy's ever coached. To me, that's at minimum an 8-win team. I think most people thought that going into the season. I think you should feel more confident now after watching that game. They'll learn to win. They have pieces on offense. Their defense, Kyle Fuller is not going to play that crappy. He is better than what he showed. Geronimo should not be smoking him down the sideline. He's a 4-7 guy. Fuller's a 4-4 guy. Like, you can't give up that play. The Randall Cobb is just an embarrassment. Like, they had breakdowns that you don't normally see of a good defense. But the one thing that stood out to me is they were gifted an all-time great player. And that second-round pick swap that somehow John Gruden gave them, I mean, in a couple years, the Raiders might suck. That pick might be like 35. So it's not like the Bears have no picks moving forward, but they do have Khalil Mack. And that team, if Mitch Trubisky can just keep improving, and I think he showed flashes on Sunday night, the Bears are going to be really good. Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers. See, he sucks. Three picks. You got to put picks in context. The first pick, the pick six, and a pick six is always terrible, literally came the following play after Jimmy hit his tight end wide open, which would have been a touchdown, down the sideline, hit his hands, and then hit the ground. But the next play, he threw a pick six. The second pick was bad, that Xavier Rhodes kind of bounced off his helmet and hit his hand. It was a good pick. Dante, it was a bad throw. And I'm not saying Jimmy G played a great game. It was probably like a C+, B-. The only reason the Niners sniffed the best defense in the league was because of Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to throw picks. I want my quarterback to throw picks. That means he has balls. That means he has stones. That means he's not afraid to take chances. And on a team like the 49ers, Jimmy Garoppolo has to take chances. Why? Because their best wide receiver right now is a second-round player from Washington, Dante Pettis. Marquise Goodwin gets a deep bone bruise or a deep, you know, a Charlie horse, and he misses the rest of the game riding the bike like he's Lance Armstrong on the sideline. Let's not act like the 49ers. Their second-best option is George Kittle. Say that out loud, George Kittle. So, listen, Jimmy Garoppolo's going to throw picks this year. I don't care. If you can't just watch Jimmy Garoppolo and go, he's really good, then I can't help you. Jimmy Garoppolo and Derek Carr both threw three picks each, total of six picks. If you watch the two games, you go, God, Jimmy Garoppolo is way better than Derek Carr. That's not even arguable. And I'm a Derek Carr guy. But the picks are not all created equal. The Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers, I've always said I don't know if they're quite a playoff team, but they're going to be just fine. They're playing the Detroit Lions that look like they've quit on their coach already. I mean, hiring Belichick assistants can just turn into an absolute disaster before you blink. Sneaky must-win game for the 49ers. You can't lose to the Detroit Lions at home. And I expect Jimmy Garoppolo and Kyle Shanahan to be much better than they were week one against the Minnesota Vikings, who, let's get into the Minnesota Vikings really quick and beat the Lions. I think the Minnesota Vikings might be the best team in the league. Top to bottom, they have the best defense in the NFL. I feel very confident saying that. Elite corner, elite safety, elite linebacker, elite defensive line. Offensive line, a little sketchy, but that's the one thing in the NFL you can make up for if you get rid of the ball quick. They have a quarterback that's much improved from Case Keenum. Their running back, Latavius Murray, is an excellent backup. Dalvin Cook looks like a star. Thielen Diggs, studs. Treadwell looks like he's coming on, like he kind of had a couple catches against the Niners. Be like, damn, that kind of reminds me of Michael Crabtree. So if they get something out of Treadwell to go along with Thielen and Diggs and Rudolph, watch out. That team is stacked. That team would be right now my pick because of the unknown with Carson Wentz and the injury coming back. Who knows when he's going to play? Obviously, if he's playing, the Eagles are really good. The Vikings right now would be my pick for the number one seed. Watching them and the Rams, I think they're better than the Rams. They played them last year. They beat them. And I just think the Vikings are better. I mean, it's just really that simple. They have not skipped a beat on offense. They look really explosive with Pat Shurmur leaving, John DeFilippo coming in, who will be a head coach, if not next year, within the next 2 years. Vikings are legit. Absolutely loaded. Mike Zimmer, stud defensive head coach. That defense will hit you in the mouth. Denver. I don't know how good Denver's going to be, but I will say this. Von Miller is remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. I feel honored to, as a football fan, to have got to watch his entire career. I was at the Super Bowl. Actually, I had a lot of money on the Denver Broncos because I love betting against Cam. And I watched that performance. One of the greatest in-game defensive performances I've ever seen. Coupled with the Niners watching Bowman and Willis that I'd throw up there. But the Von Miller performance Sunday. And I know they're just playing a shitty offensive line in Seattle. But he looked like, if you ever watched a high school game, when one dude for the high school is like going to SC, Ohio State, or Alabama, and you're like, oh my God, this is a man playing with boys. It definitely happens in basketball. If you've ever been to a high school basketball game where the dude's going to like Duke or UCLA, and he's just jamming on like the little white guy and just, you know, fadeaway threes, and you're like, that guy looks like Michael Jordan. That's what Von Miller looked like Sunday against Seattle Seahawks. He took over the game. He is just a man on a mission, and he's one of the greatest defense. He's a lock Hall of Famer, 3 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, and just stole Seattle's soul as the game went on. So again, I don't know how good Denver's going to be. They do look improved. To me, probably 7-8 wins, but Von Miller is truly one of not just the all-time greats, but it's as good as it gets. And if you love watching defensive pass rushers, he's a guy to watch. Dallas. Listen, the Jason Garrett thing's over. I talked earlier about Eli being meh. Like, Jason Garrett, is there a more just meh coach in the NFL? Like, just average? Like, Jason Garrett, what? I talked earlier about Chip Kelly having one pitch, and at least Chip's high end was much higher than Jason Garrett's. Like, Jason, what do you do? You don't call the offense, you don't call the defense, you just clap all the time, and you are an offensive guy, a quarterback, yet your offenses are just so boring. Now, I'm not sure Dak is any good. I would have been the last guy to ever jump on the Dak train. He threw for 170 yards. He was like 19 of 29. Did not have a touchdown. Fairness to him, his wide receivers suck. But I just watch him, and I never thought, even when he was kicking ass and taking names that rookie year, that, to use Colin's term, that he popped. You know, he doesn't have a great arm. He's a good athlete, but he's not like a dynamic, picky apart, going through his progressions, just some, you know, savant as a quarterback. He's not some gunslinger because he does not have the arm strength. And him and Jason Garrett is just, it's not doing it for me. Tony Romo elevated Jason Garrett. Tony Romo is one of those guys that's going to go down in the hall of really good, probably underappreciated when it's all said and done. Dak Prescott will never sniff Tony Romo. Couldn't hold Tony Romo's jock. I get why they went with Dak Prescott that year. He was playing so well. The team was winning. It was a no-brainer. That doesn't mean that he, you know, and I think most people, we got our next Tony. No, he ain't the next Tony Romo. I promise you that. He ain't as good. Jason Garrett's terrible. Whether he's got, you know, dirt or naked pictures of Jerry, I don't know. It doesn't seem like he's going anywhere. The Cowboys have issues. And then the Baltimore Ravens. My one theory was John Harbaugh was jealous of Jim, his brother Jim, because his dad lives in Michigan. The family takes a lot of pride in influencing young men. His dad is a college coach, not a pro coach, so he loves the college game. And I thought John would eventually get a little jealous of that. USC, Clay Helton, let's call it what it is. He is a University of Texas loss this weekend away from getting fired. Now, he literally might not get fired in the season, but his career at SC would be done at the end of the year. And I thought Lynn Swan, NFL guy, you know, rival of the Ravens, Steeler guy, would go after John Harbaugh. Because John Harbaugh, as his owner said, it crossed his mind firing him last year. Well, say one thing for John Harbaugh, it looks like his team is on a mission. Now, they played the Bills, who might be the worst team in the NFL, but they beat the living crap out of them. They look good. Good defense, Michael Crabtree, John Brown. Flacco is motivated for the first time in a long time. It might be a 9 or 10 win playoff team, especially if the Steelers regress a little bit. Who's to say they couldn't win the division? I feel like my theory is taking some hits. I'm not quite as confident that John Harbaugh will be the next coach of USC. Not because USC won't want him, because he won't be available. Because he'll get a contract extension. Because Ozzie Newsome is retiring, and then John Harbaugh would have all the juice. He would basically become a Pete Carroll, a John Gruden, and Andy Reid. He'd run the organization, basically. Now, he's got to win, and he's got to make the playoffs, but that is in play because clearly the Ravens are much improved. Last team. I'm not going to pump the brakes on this team because I do think they're really good. And at the end of the day, they probably end up winning the NFC West by two or three games. Because who's going to finish second in the NFC West? The Niners at 8-8, 9-7, best case. The Rams probably win the division. You think about it. They could win 13. They could win the division by four. They could have the division basically wrapped up in the first week of December. But I think when you watch them, you go, is Jared Goff just going to slice and dice teams week in, week out when he has to? Now, if he can consistently go to Todd Gurley, who is just a remarkable elite talent, like a special player, can catch the football, can run inside, can run outside, has elite top-end speed, his vision is much improved, just a special player, worth every penny. But he is the straw that stirs that drink, not the quarterback. So whenever that's the case, if that guy goes out, it changes everything. If they got into a pinch where Todd Gurley sprained an ankle and was out a month, could they rely on Jared Goff to just bang out wins? I don't know. And I'm a Jared Goff guy. But to me, that would be just watching them Monday night. Sean McVay's fantastic. Todd Gurley's fantastic. Aaron Donald's stud. Wade Phillips, big time. But I think at the end of the day, like, their weakness is their quarterback. And again, he's not bad. It's not like he's a Blake Bortles or anything. But I'm talking about the elite. They're held to a new standard. Like, they got to go to war with the Eagles. They got to go to war with the Vikings. Like, that's the level. Can they beat a healthy Green Bay Packers? Could they beat the Patriots? Like, that's the level we're talking about the Rams now. Like, they're in that category. And I don't know. I don't see it yet. I'm not saying he can't get there, because he does show flashes. And I'm rooting for him. I like Jared Goff. I just don't know. That would be my one red flag on the Los Angeles Rams, is can they depend on their quarterback if shit hits the fan? Can they just rely on him to carry them? Because we've seen it forever, that at the end of the day, in these big games against the best teams, the quarterback has to make plays. Let's get to the Middlecoff mailbag, and like always, you can slide up in my Instagram DMs, at John Middlecoff. My DMs are open. Slide up in them, and I'll either answer the question directly, sometimes I do that if it's not a super long question, or I will get to it here on the Middlecoff mailbag, and I wrote down a bunch. I'm behind a little bit, and also, you can listen to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm an Apple guy, so I listen to it on iTunes, but I know not everyone does. If you do listen on iTunes, slide up in iTunes, subscribe, rate, I'm sure you're subscribed if you're listening to this, and just in the review section, you can leave a question, and just leave a question, and I'll bang out a couple, actually, right now. See who this, okay, this is, hello, my name is Michael. What's up, Michael? And I'm curious why most analysts and sportscasters overlook Jordan Howard. He's the only Bears running back to run for 1,000 yards in his first two seasons. Good stat. And this is a team that has two of the best running backs ever in Walter Payton and Gale Sayers. Another good point. Is it because he doesn't catch the passes out of the backfield? Question. Mike, I think the main issue is that the Bears haven't been good. And anytime you're on a really shitty team and you have a great player, you get overlooked just by good teams, because we talk about good teams more than we talk about bad teams. But I also think he showed out really good in the Sunday night game. It's pretty crazy. I tweeted this out during the Sunday night game. Like, God, those Jordan Howard trade rumors were fun. He's a really good player. There's just no disputing that. And I think if the Bears have the season that I expect them to have, 8-9, you know, wins, competing for a wild card, we're going to talk about Jordan Howard. If he has another 1,000 yards, we're going to talk about Jordan Howard. But it's also the nature of, they have a brand new coach. They're going to talk about Matt Nagy more than they do the running back. They just signed Khalil Mack, one of the great defensive players of the last 20 years. He's going to get a lot of headlines. Mitch Trubisky is just the quarterback. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about him. The running back, like as we see on the financial market, you know, in the league, it's just an underappreciated position. And if you're not, you know, David Johnson, a Le'Veon Bell, Todd Gurley, you just don't get talked about as much. even though you're right, he deserves more pub. And I think if the Bears have a good season and he continues to dominate, we will definitely talk about him more because I like him. I like him a lot. I thought he was excellent in that Green Bay game, running hard, showing he can go inside and outside. But you do bring up a good point. Part of 2018 to be a really, really dynamic back. Like, he's not their pass catcher. Cohen is, right? So most of the great backs in this day and age, Le'Veon, Gurley, Shady, Zeke, they never come off the field. They do it all. Well, Jordan does share a little bit, and rightfully so. I mean, Cohen's a stud. John, do players objectively have any leverage in holdouts other than creating media scrutiny and not actually playing? Each week they hold out, the player loses a fat paycheck. In sales, it's all about leverage, and it seems that the teams have it all. It's a good point. I would say you have leverage if you're a great player that's unreplaceable, right? If you're a great salesman and you produce 10 times in your business what the next best salesman produces, that company needs you around because your business is so important that it's not replaceable, that your connections are at the highest end, you know, wherever you're dealing with, you are doing more business than everyone else. It's not that you can't argue that. Where I think, like Le'Veon Bell, for example, I'm going to get into this question, and I'll mix this in now because Garrett on Instagram asked, like, what's my take on the Le'Veon Bell situation? Does that hurt Pittsburgh? Thoughts on their O-line's comments? I think you saw the O-line taking shots at Le'Veon because they went, yo, Le'Veon, you're making $14.5 million. That's the highest paid running back in the NFL. It's not like you're underpaid. You are highly paid. You are paid a premium. We just saw David Johnson get a contract extension of $30 million guaranteed. Now, Le'Veon's proven he's a better player, but yo, Lev, that's the market. Like, what would you... You've been suspended twice. You've had a DUI and got nailed for PEDs and had your leg snapped. And you in 2 years will have accumulated about $27 million. Like, you ain't got much leverage, bro. But I'll tell you who did have leverage. Aaron Donald did. Because Aaron Donald goes, I'm the best defensive lineman in the league. So the Rams, you know, had to capitulate and gave him $87 million. That immediately gave even more leverage to Khalil. Khalil, the market is set. I will not have a discussion with you if the starting point is not $87 million guaranteed. Earl Thomas, he showed up. Why? He didn't have any leverage. Like, Earl, you're on your second contract. You're making a ton. I don't know what you want, buddy. So I think it all depends on the player. If a quarterback ever were to hold out, they would have enormous leverage. The rare peak guy in their prime, Khalil Mack, Aaron Donald, like Luke Kuechly a couple years ago, Fletcher Cox a couple years ago, they would have leverage. But the one thing about the NFL and the reason the league is so strong is most players don't. It's a owner-team league. They are in control. They are in the driver's seat, just like most companies. But every so often, certain employees have leverage. Doing this podcast for the Colin Coward Podcast Network, guess what? Colin produces. Howard Stern produces. They got leverage. You know, certain employees have a lot of leverage, even if they work for enormous companies. They are so valuable. If you're a great salesman and you're way better than anyone in your company, you have some leverage. But if you're a player like Le'Veon Bell, like, yo, Lev, your backup just came in. Guess what he did? He ran for over 100 yards. He had 2 touchdowns. I can replace your production. Is he as good as you? No. But you know what he is? He's way cheaper than you. How much does James Conner make? 600 grand? What does Le'Veon make? $14.5 million? I'd rather have the guy making 600 grand, getting me 140 yards, 2 touchdowns, than paying a guy 14.5 for the same. Because again, the football's all economics. It's just basic numbers. Now, if Le'Veon was a great guy and had never been in trouble and his teammates liked him, no different than if you're liked inside companies, those guys usually stick around. For Le'Veon's offensive linemen to take a bunch of shots at him, do you know what that shows me? They don't really like him. Because you know what I know would not have happened if Khalil Mack hadn't been traded and he was still holding out? None of his teammates would have said anything. They would have said, we need this guy. Why? Because they like him. It showed me that Ramon Foster and Pouncey, they're not that big on Le'Veon Bell. And maybe if they were, he would have already been paid. So maybe it's a Le'Veon Bell problem. So back here, the overall answer to this question is few players have leverage, non-quarterbacks, but the great ones do, and they can force the hand of a team. But for the most part, every other player is replaceable. Chase on Instagram, what are realistic expectations for Mahomes? He actually asked this question before week one, but we saw Mahomes threw four touchdowns. Now, really, a couple of them were those crazy handoffs, Andy Reid just being a magician play caller on the goal line. And the other one was an unreal slant pass sidearm to Tyreek Hill, but Tyreek Hill did the rest. One thing's clear, though. Mahomes' talent is just freakish. I think he could throw 30-plus touchdowns. He is going to throw some interceptions. The Chargers and their home field advantage are a joke. I will never take the Chargers seriously. One thing's clear with the Kansas City Chiefs. Their offense is stacked. Elite wide receiver. A second wide receiver that's damn good in Sammy Watkins. Kareem Hunt. Travis Kelce. Their offensive line is good. Andy Reid is an elite offensive coordinator. He is going to put up big numbers. Now, he's going to go through adversity. Every young quarterback does. So I don't expect every game to look that easy. Plus, their defense is not good. But they are going to score points, man. They are going to have some games when you look up and you go, oh my God, do the Chiefs have 40 points and there's 5 minutes left in the third quarter? They are going to have some moments when they light up the other team like a Christmas tree. And I his arm is so special. His ability to make something out of nothing is extremely special. And his playmakers around him are just stacked. So my expectations for Mahomes are high. I think the AFC West, we'll see. This Raider-Bronco game is going to be telling. I mean, are the Broncos going to start 2-0? Are the Raiders going to be 0-2 and feel out of it? Are the Chargers going to bounce back? Because to me right now, if I was a betting man after 1 week, I'd probably put some cash on the Kansas City Chiefs to win the division. Evan, rank your top 10 coaches and how many NCAA guys would you put over NFL guys? I think my top two are pretty easy. Bill Belichick, number one coach of all time. Obviously, active coaches. Number two, I'd have Nick Saban. I mean, five national championships at Alabama. You just watch their program. It's unlike anything I've ever seen. Three's tough because I bumped Urban down a little bit because he's somewhat of a pain in the ass. Now, he's won a couple national championships, but he left Florida just an absolute shambles. This deal with Ohio State, while they are stacked, he can't coach this week against TCU. It's the primetime game. So I bumped him down. And people are going to call me a homer for this, but his resume speaks for itself. And when you factor in how consistent he is, how easy he is to deal with, I'd have Andy Reid number three because I think he would crush it in college if he wanted to, and he dominates the NFL. Now, he's had problems in the playoffs. I think that's going to change with Mahomes. They're going to get over the top in the next 5 years with Patrick Mahomes. Urban, I'd have four just because, a little biased, I just don't like him. I will not dispute he's a great coach, but he's a pain in the ass. Five, I've had Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll won in college and won in the pros. I know he's going through a couple-year tough stretch here in Seattle, but again, his resume speaks for itself. Multiple national championships at USC, went to back-to-back Super Bowls in Seattle, big-time football coach. Six, I have Mike Tomlin. All he does is win. Win, win, win. Again, bad tie Sunday, but Roethlisberger was atrocious. I don't put that on Tomlin. Five turnovers, that just cannot happen in the NFL. But again, Mike Tomlin's resume speaks for itself. I'd be shocked if they're not in the AFC Championship this year. Seven, Pete, University of Washington. All he did at Boise State was kick everyone's ass. All he's doing at the University of Washington was go to the playoffs a couple years ago. It looks like he's going to go back this year. Or he's going to have a chance to. Absolutely stacked team. Stud. I love Chris Peterson. Eight. This guy, a little older. I'm not an ageist here. I got to give older guys a little love. Mike Zimmer. Took him a long time to get a shot, but look at the Minnesota Vikings. They are kicking ass and taking names. They missed a field goal a couple years ago, or they would have beat Seattle. I mean, Blair Walsh, come on. You got to make a chip shot. Last year, I know they lost in the AFC Championship game, but it looked like God was finally on Philadelphia's side. I think Mike Zimmer is big time, and right now they'd probably be my favorites to win the Super Bowl. Nine, I'm going the young gun, Sean McVay. He looks just like the next young John Gruden 20 years ago. Looks like an absolute flat-out star, total package, and I had to put a millennial on this list. 10, I'm going Dabo Sweeney. Clemson is awesome. Program is basically the Alabama right now of the ACC. The moment Nick Saban retires, he will 100% be Alabama's number one choice. It's just going to be, does he want to go coach to Alabama or does he want to stay at Clemson? if I had to pick my gut right now, would be that he ends up staying at Clemson, but you never know. Money talks, shit walks. So I think you got Bill Saban, Andy Urban, Pete Carroll, Mike Tomlin, Chris Peterson, Mike Zimmer, McVay, Dabo. There are obviously several other guys you could easily throw in. You can argue with this list all day long. It's not an easy list to make. So I got more Middlecoff mailbags questions I'll get to next week. Slide up in my DMs on Instagram at John Middlecoff. Go to iTunes. You can leave a question in iTunes. I will also get to it that way. Appreciate everyone listening. Another week of Three and Out. You go to SeatGeek. Use my promo code J-O-H-N. That's John. You will get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Listen to all you guys listening. Three and Out podcast on the Colin Cowherd Podcast Network.